Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Welcome back to The Drive.
Kendrick Morales, that was one of the best moves I've covered in my 30 years in ball because nobody wanted this guy. I mean, nobody. He had that disastrous season the year before, and he had a monster year in 15. I think they win it all without him. I mean, you guys remember the big home run in Game 5 against Houston?
Back in on The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the brand new Odyssey app. Coming up in about 10 minutes, we'll be joined in studio by Jay Binkley. Binkley was itching to talk some Waffle House. He was also itching to talk some NFL. Why is he ready to talk about Waffle House? Well, today is the 3-year anniversary of the passing of Anthony Bourdain. Rest in peace to a king. Here's what he had to say explaining the legendary Waffle House.
It is indeed marvelous. An irony-free zone where everything is beautiful and nothing hurts. Where everybody, regardless of race, creed, color, or degree of inebriation, is welcomed. Its warm yellow glow, a beacon of hope and salvation, inviting the hungry, the lost, the seriously hammered, all across the South to come inside. A place of safety and nourishment. It never closes. It is always, always faithful, always there for you.
So Binkley said that he wants to come in and talk about Waffle House, which that's one of the restaurants I'm always down to have a chat with. So Bink will be in the studio coming up in about 10 minutes. We'll talk some football and food with our guy, Jay Binkley. You're listening to The Drive on 610 Sports Radio. Let's talk about Jackson Kowar from yesterday. We haven't really talked so much about it today because, to be completely honest with you, there ain't really been a whole lot to talk about from Jackson Kowar. You know those movies kind of like Plane, Trains, and Automobiles or Meet the Parents where it's a anything that can go wrong will go wrong comedy? That's exactly what it was yesterday from Jackson Kowar. It was almost like the Royals wanted us to watch the NBA playoffs yesterday. Like, let's not waste a whole lot of time here. Let's just go ahead and get in and out of this bad boy and then give you the rest of your night free to go about your business. Yesterday, the start went as poorly as possible. And I want to get your take on this, Rob, because I was reading this story and the story said that right now the gap between or the transition between AAA baseball to the majors is possibly the biggest jump that we've ever seen. The minor leaguers had a very disjointed 2020. This year got off to a late start that if you're trying to quote unquote fast track somebody through the system, they're just going to naturally start from behind. And at least if we're talking about it in the Royals perspective, we have two clear examples of that. Daniel Lynch from a prospect and ranking level is ready. We had JJ Cooper on the show yesterday. Daniel Lynch is the top 20 prospect in baseball. It didn't look like it when we saw him here in Kansas City. Jackson Kowar is a top 30 prospect in baseball. It certainly didn't look at it. I don't think that these guys were rushed through the system. I do think in a traditional sense, they were ready to be promoted and elevated to Major League Baseball. I just wonder this year, because of how odd the last 18 months have been for minor league prospects, maybe the guy who was typically ready in June now isn't going to be ready until August because they need to get more time and more seasoning down in the minors.
Oh, 100% agree. And I think Jackson Kowar is a great example. Now, it's a one-game sample size for his start, so he can still improve and be better, but he didn't get out of the first inning, and he has an ERA right now in the majors of 54. Now, that's because he didn't get out of the first inning. But so we think he maybe was a little rushed or wasn't quite ready or whatever, but you look at his AAA numbers. Now, I'm no scout. I was not up there. I've never gone to Omaha. Dayton Moore and his group have a lot more information available than I do. But you look at his numbers alone in AAA just this season. Nothing about his numbers indicates that he should be staying in AAA for more seasoning. He had an ERA under 1 as a starter in AAA. He had a whip of under 1. For those who don't like whip, that's a really, really, really impressive stat. He gave up 3 runs the entirety of his time in AAA. And then he came up here and just didn't seem to have it. And then made the first start, made some things after the game. It's a situation where he just felt, you know, pressured or a little hyped up or nervy, whatever the term. But there is something to be said for guys aren't quite ready, but coming up because of the weird minor league season. And outside of giving players extra seasoning, I don't know if there's a real solution to the problem.
No, I don't know if there's a solution to the problem either. And I think that's an interesting quandary right now for the Kansas City Royals and other major league systems. Someone on the text line says something really interesting. 913-576-7610. After watching Jackson Kowar pitch, I would definitely lock in 84 and 76. We need one of those guys to step up for us. Pitching is key in August and September. So if you guys remember last week, there was a poll question by Josh Vernier where it was based on where the Royals were trending. They were trending to win 84 games. You could press the button and lock in 84 wins or roll the dice. They could potentially do better. I do think that we've seen enough Royals baseball as we are at almost the 60-game mark with this team where we know exactly what the Royals are. I mean, maybe there is an amazing second-half push coming from this team, but I think we know, at least if we're talking about in a playoff sense, because even in 2014 when the Royals got super hot the second half of the season, the offense fully came around, and we then learned that their bullpen was one of the greatest bullpens in the history of the NFL. In baseball. They were elite at something. I don't really see anything that the 2021 Royals are elite at, and I don't think they're supposed to be elite at anything. I don't think they're great offensively. I don't think they have a great starting pitching. I don't think their bullpen is great. I think it's fine. I don't think anyone would say that they have a great bullpen. Their offense isn't consistent enough. This is a 79 to probably, 83 win team? That's probably what the Royals are. There's nothing wrong with that. If they come in that range and they win between 79 and 83 games this season, that is a tremendous step forward. They clearly jump over what their over-under was in Vegas, and this is a successful season for everybody involved. We then see what they need to work on heading into the offseason, a year of seasoning. And I would say a lot of these starting pitchers, if you give them consistent starts the second half of the year in the final 6 weeks of the season, then you start with the leg up for 2022. And you can then challenge to be either the wild card winner or challenge to win the division. But I think we can pretty safely say now on June 8th, they do not have a realistic chance of winning their division. The White Sox are just better than the Royals. We all knew the White Sox were going to be better than the Royals. That's not some grand revelation. That it's about developing your players, starting to infuse them with the talent that you have, setting a standard of winning baseball, which the Royals haven't had for the last 3 seasons, and using this as a stepping stool and a boost for what the Royals have planned for moving forward. I think we've seen enough Royals baseball to know all of those things to be true. I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that's an overwhelming positive thing. The Royals were scheduled to win 72 games. They could finish this year with a winning record. But in order to do special things in the regular season, you have to be special. And I do think we've seen enough from the Royals to know that this team's not special. This team's good. This team's competitive. But you got to be special to make the Major League Baseball playoffs because of how few teams make it. And Rob, I just don't think that this team does anything special.
You made this analogy before, so I'll just piggyback off it. When we had the topic a few weeks ago, maybe it was last week, where Vern had the numbers. This team was trending toward 84 and 78. And the text line filled up, and we had callers fill up with, well, that's not winning. That's not a playoff team. Why would I sign up for a team that's not a playoff team? If you're not going to be in the playoffs, why even play this season? I remember looking at the text line being like, what on earth is happening? Because that's not how Royals fans have acted for the entirety of my life. And it was very odd. I think now as we get deeper in the season, I know that was only a week ago, and we see the Royals play, it's a college football analogy. They're a scrappy 5-7, 4-8 team. They might back into a bowl game because there's 7,000 of them, but more likely than not, they are not a bowl team. But fans are talking about them like they're an 8 or 9 win team that needs to be in consideration for a conference title game. And they're not that. Doesn't mean that they can't be that in the upcoming seasons, but right now they are not that team. And it's fine. You can be a good baseball team and have a productive season and develop talent while still winning and not make the playoffs and not have the town deem it a huge, huge failure. But I do think the Royals are kind of in a rock and a hard place now with those young pitchers, because it's pretty clear they're too good for AAA and they're not good enough, or at least in what we've seen, for up here. So how do you develop those guys so that next year they are ready? They are ready to hit the ground running going into 2022. Could they dominate AAA and come up here and get their teeth kicked in? What's the development plan? There is no plan.
I do think we need to give Jackson Kowar a little bit more time to kind of come to that conclusion. Like, yesterday could not have gone worse for the Royals than it did. But they gave Daniel Lynch 4 starts before they made the determination. I don't want to solely judge Jackson Kowar on this one individual time up here off the 1 start. The 1 start went poorly. It went really bad. Let's see if they wait to let him make his next start whenever they come back into town. He can have his next start against the Tigers. That would be, what, next Monday at home against a bad baseball team. Let's see how the Royals play here. I mean, you got 2 high-end prospects, so at some point you got to throw them into the deep end and you got to throw them into the fire, and they tried to do it. It didn't work early on with Daniel Lynch, but at some point he'll be back up here. They're doing it right now with Jackson Kowar, even though the first time was not very encouraging. Let's step aside here. Jay Binkley will join us in studio. Bink, up next. Keep it locked in right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive, 610 Sports Radio.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back into The Drive on 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app.
Coming up in a little bit, we'll be joined by Jay Binkley. But quickly, for the first time in GEHA Field at Arrowhead Stadium history, Garth Brooks, the number one selling solo artist in U.S. history and 7-time CMA Entertainer of the Year, will play at Arrowhead Event Stage on Saturday, August 7th at 7 p.m. Tickets will go on sale this Friday at 10 a.m. Tickets will be available online at or on the Ticketmaster app on mobile devices. There are no advanced box office sales and no general ticket sales at GEHA Field at Arrowhead Stadium ticket office in advance of the show. Garth Brooks has sold more records than Michael Jackson? I had no clue. I learned something today. Garth Brooks, the number one selling solo artist in U.S. history. He's performing at Arrowhead Stadium. Very happy to be joined in studio right now by a good friend of mine. His name is Jay Binkley. He loves food. He loves football. We will talk about Waffle House coming up momentarily, because you have talked to me about Waffle House probably 3 times in the last 2 hours.
Disrespect.
Number one, I want to get your reaction on the Julio Jones trade. Yeah. I thought the only team that had publicly been trying to get Julio Jones this entire time has been Tennessee. I thought that Los Angeles, the Chargers, made a lot of sense for him. Certainly, we could have made an argument for a couple of other teams, but at least according to reports from people far more sourced than you or I, Peter King said that Tennessee was the only team that was really interested, that really made a substantial offer for Julio Jones. What do you make of the move? What do you make of the lack of interest for Julio?
Well, it's weird. Tennessee was one of those teams willing to give them a clean 2, meaning a lot of teams are willing to give them a 3, and playing time of production that could be a 2. Well, Tennessee didn't want to play that game. They said, give us a 2. Not this, you know, if they perform a certain respect, we'll give you a three. It could become a two. They didn't want to play that game. I understand it. I'm with you. Tennessee was in on him a long time ago. And A.J. Brown, all those pictures of him and Julio, it just made sense. I mean, this made sense for Tennessee to get Julio Jones in so many different ways. This is a team that's been flirting in the playoffs. This is a team destined to get into that second bubble to face the Chiefs, and they haven't got there. It's their own fault. The defense was fourth worst in the NFL last year. Sure, they brought in Bud Dupree. Bud Dupree's coming off an ACL. And to expect Bud Dupree's a fine player, but to expect him to be the end-all, be-all outside linebacker for the Tennessee Titans and make the defense better, you can't look at that. But look at the offense for the Tennessee Titans. Lose Corey Davis, and you lose Jonnu Smith, the tight end. I'd say, if I was ranking him, he'd be 10th or 11th best tight end in the NFL, to be honest with you, Jonnu Smith, who's now a member of New England Patriots. Now, Corey Davis and Jonnu Smith collected for 106 catches, 1,423 yards, and 13 touchdowns. Okay, so you got that. It's addition, subtraction. Now you got Julio Jones, who's coming off the hamstring and foot issues. Now, if Julio Jones, if he had a season rate, 106 catches, 1,423 yards, 13 touches, that's great. But then you have to ask me how they got better. How did Tennessee get better? Because essentially, they just replaced what they had lost. And to ask Julio Jones to have those numbers, I think it's pie in the sky at his age. Plus, you lost a tight end. So not only are you losing a wide receiver in Corey Davis, you're losing a tight end in Jonnu Smith. If I asked, you know, football people, 10 out of 10, would you rather have Julio Jones or Corey Davis and Jonnu Smith? Which collection would you rather have? And I think a lot of people in the know would say Corey Davis and Jonnu Smith. Again, it's addition and subtraction. Like, Julio Jones is nice. That's a big name. But are you just replacing the production you had? Where have you moved forward? And they haven't.
I was going to ask you that, if you think this moves the needle, which doesn't sound like you do think that it moves the needle. I do look at their offense, and I hear what you're saying. But I'm looking at the addition of Bud Dupree on the defense. So you at least have
off an ACL,
a proven pass rusher, one of the better defensive players last year in the AFC, now switching teams to go to Pittsburgh to Tennessee. You have, I would say that Tannehill's been a top 12 quarterback in the league based on the production that we've seen from him.
Timeout, three games over 300 yards last season. His second best performance of the year, where he threw 366, was against Houston. Derrick Henry had 212 yards that game. Another game, he went over 300 yards. Derrick Henry had 120 yards rushing. What I'm saying is, how he goes, Derrick Henry goes.
I agree with you, but it's hard to me to then look at the numbers of what we've seen, just the raw data with Ryan Tannehill. He has made 26 starts for Tennessee in the regular season. They're 18-8. He's completing 68% of his passes. He has 55 touchdowns to 13 interceptions. Last year, he threw over 30 touchdown passes and had fewer than 10 interceptions. Like, Ryan Tannehill has been good. Do I think he's an elite high-end QB in the NFL? Certainly not. But if we're talking, like, if we're ranking quarterbacks in the AFC, I think he's fourth.
No, I disagree with you completely. Because it's cute numbers. Yeah, a lot of people talking about Tannehill and his productions. First of all, you got to win. And also, are you facing an eight-man front? I mean, that opens up the secondary so much more. Teams are so conscious of Derrick Henry and what he can do to them. He is facing different defenses than Patrick Mahomes and other elite quarterbacks are. He just is. They have handed off to Derrick Henry almost 700 times the last two seasons. That means he's taking the snap, turning around, handing Derrick Henry. He's putting him in second and short. He's getting him in third and short. He's putting him in good situations. Yeah, he put up good numbers, but against a defense that's predicated to stop Derrick Henry and not him. What happened in the playoffs 2 years ago? Derrick Henry was rolling, man. He was rolling. He got to Kansas City. Kansas City found a way to stop him. It's up to you, Tannehill. It's up to you to go out and win this game. Did he do it? No. Tannehill, listen, he puts up fine numbers, but again, he faces a different style of defense. That's public enemy number one is Derrick Henry when any team faces him. Just like with the Chiefs and Jamaal Charles. Jamaal Charles is public enemy number one. Didn't matter what the quarterback did. Didn't matter what else. Even Chuck Pagano said it before the Chiefs played the Colts in the playoffs. We got to stop this guy. That's what they're saying about Derrick Henry. We got to find a way to stop this guy. Tannehill is the benefactor of a Derrick Henry.
I don't disagree with you, but a couple of things. Number one, Mahomes, Allen, Jackson, I think are all clearly better than Ryan Tannehill. I think it's hard to sort of rank Deshaun Watson right now in the AFC without the certainty of knowing what's going to happen with him. But I would take Ryan Tannehill over Baker Mayfield if you're asking me who I could pick. I would take Ryan Tannehill over Ben Roethlisberger if you're asking me. I would say, at least based on the track record of the last two seasons, I would rank Tannehill right now ahead of Herbert. I think Herbert could pass him at the end of the season. But right now, if you ask me heading into the year, who would I take, Tannehill or Herbert? I would take Tannehill over him. I think he's played really good. And one thing I'll push back on when it comes to Tannehill, what you said about Tannehill, I think is the case for like 26 quarterbacks in the NFL. Like, outside of those elite guys, I think they're largely dependent on situation. So I don't want to penalize Tannehill for also now being in a good situation. You're right. He does have the run game. If they can get that defense up to par, and now you give him two legitimate number one type wide receivers, and then you throw Josh Reynolds in as the number three, I mean, I think they're one of the three or four best offenses in the conference.
They don't have a tight end. They don't have a tight end, and that's, you know, Jonnu Smith made a ton to that team. He did, whether it's running game or passing game, he meant a lot to the team. And I know they brought in Josh Reynolds, text line, but he's an average player. I don't see how Tennessee took that step forward. I don't. Tight end right now, Anthony Finkser. Who? Anthony Finkser. Backup tight end, Jeff Swaim, who had 9 catches last year. I just don't see Tennessee is taking that chance. Again, you know, Derrick Henry's been healthy for him. Good job. You know, nice job. But he's had almost 700 carries the last 2 years. We know what happens to running backs, especially last year when he had 378 carries, right? We know what happens to running backs in this. It's just inevitable. It happens to everybody. It happens to the best of them. The best running backs in this league flail out year after year. They're great 1 minute and bad the next. You know, even a guy like Le'Veon Bell that takes a year off, you know? He had all that rest. Well, he came back and was crap. You know what I mean? You just can't do it. You fall off that cliff really quickly. Not saying Derrick Henry is going to fall off the cliff at this point. I don't think he is. I do think he is if he's going to keep carrying 378 times. You know, human beings just can't do that in this league.
I do think whenever it ends for Derrick Henry, it's going to end in a Larry Johnson-like fashion.
And it's going to be ugly for Tennessee.
It's going to be bad. I agree with you. I don't think that he's, with his usage, he's not someone that ages gracefully. Is he somebody that probably gets hurt early on in the season, and then we look back and he was never the same after that injury? That's probably how it ends for Derrick Henry. But as of now, he's been on a pretty incredible run. Are you ready to put Tennessee ahead of Indianapolis? You love Indianapolis.
Hell no. I'm willing to put Indianapolis almost as high as the Buffalo Bills, to be honest with you, looking straight at the Kansas City Chiefs. They took a step forward. The Cleveland Browns took a huge step forward. And anybody doubting them, look at all these rankings coming out. Like, what have I been preaching on the show the last couple weeks? Cleveland Browns offensive line is the best in the NFL. No one wanted to believe me. Pro Football Focus ranked the top offensive lines in pro football. Who's number one? Cleveland Browns.
I believe you. I'm always going to roll with you. You know that?
I know, in their defense. You know, they took 50% of the Rams secondary. Number one secondary in the NFL, now in Cleveland. And they draft Greg Newsom. Like, the Cleveland Browns have done that necessary step to look after public enemy number one, which is in the Kansas City Chiefs. Chiefs did this with the Patriots. The Chiefs drafted to beat the Patriots. They didn't care about the Broncos. They didn't care about the Chargers. They cared about the New England Patriots. You know why? Because they should care about the New England Patriots. They had to find a way to beat that team. And you know what? Here's Spags. Here's a guy that knows how to beat Tom Brady. Beat Tom Brady in the biggest moments. Spags comes in. The rest is history. Tom Brady's now in Tampa. You know what I'm saying? The Chiefs geared their team, their season, their offseason to beat the New England Patriots. The Bills need to worry about their own division. That division's tougher, a lot tougher than the AFC West in coming out of that. No, I like the Colts. And no, I'm not saying I'm a big Carson Wentz fan, although I did like him with Frank Reich. But when you pair that offensive line in Indy, because I know Anthony Costanza retired, still got Ryan Kelly at center, still got the best offensive lineman in the NFL, Quentin Nelson, still have Braden Smith. Oh, and by the way, they also boast the third leading rusher in the NFL last year, Jonathan Taylor. And that defense at Indy is better than Buffalo. The offensive line is better than Buffalo. Yeah, Josh Allen's better. I'll give him that. Stephon Diggs, he's better. They did lose John Brown, who was kind of a vertical threat for him, sometimes injured, but he provided that extra thing Buffalo was looking for. Yeah, they replaced in the draft with Marquez Stevenson, who I really, really like, out of Houston in the sixth round. But what do you really expect from a sixth rounder in this year's draft? I don't see that step forward. You know, Baltimore, if you want to say, okay, Sammy Watkins, if healthy, could be a good receiver, but you draft Tylan Wallace and you draft Rashad Bateman, okay, I buy that. Julio Jones would have been sweet in Baltimore for that team. Still concerned about the offensive line with Baltimore because I think they're in this we need to take a look at ourselves mode more than take a look at somebody else. When I had their beat writer on, Jonas Schaefer, when he made that comment, like that was damning on Baltimore, man. That was damning that they're looking at themselves instead of everybody else. That's not how you have to play. You always have to keep your eye. You have to keep your eye on your enemy. Keep your friends close. You keep your enemies closer, right? They did not do that.
Right now, we're talking to Jay Binkley in studio. We'll do random question with Jay Binkley coming up in about 5 minutes or so. 913-576-7610. Random question time with my guy, Jay Binkley. I think the Chiefs made a mistake by not bringing back Bashaud Breeland. You know how I am about corner. I would spend more resources on corner than the Chiefs do, but the Chiefs, we have differing opinions when it comes to cornerback play. They don't really have a lot of experience. They don't really have a lot of proven depth, I would say, when it comes to their cornerback. Now that we know, it's not hypothetical, because you and I both thought that Bashaud Breeland was eventually going to re-sign with Kansas City. Do you think they made a mistake in not bringing him back?
No, I don't. I think they have high hopes on what they have. And sometimes teams, and we've seen the Royals do this to some extent, where they trust their coaching staff. And you look at Dave Merritt and Sam Madison, and Spagnuolo's a defensive back guy too. And I told you last week, see that, when you got my instant reaction on this. You got Mike Hughes and DeAndre Baker. Those are both first-round pick number 30s from 2018 and 2019. And I get it. Hughes has been often injured. I get it.
Often injured. He's made 7 starts in 3 seasons.
Yeah, he's had some injury problems.
Adalberto Mondesi.
He's had some problems.
Mike Mondesi,
you know,
is what
Mondesi,
we need to start
Mondesi's
calling him.
Mondesi's going to turn it on at some point.
At some point, yeah.
Well, they like Hughes. And Hughes can return kicks as well. I like him. What I'm saying is they have high hopes in what they already have. Not only that, the Chiefs are pretty heavy safety driven. I mean, hell, look last year. With Tyrann Mathieu, has been in the slot over 400 times the last 2 years. I mean, that's where a lot of times receivers go. Now, L'Jarius Sneed, can he play inside or outside? He could do both. I know people were really liking him on the inside on the slot because when he came back from that collarbone injury, he was good at the slot. In my opinion, he was the Chiefs Rookie of the Year last year. He had 171 snaps in the slot, 164 on the outside. Pretty even split, to be honest with you, with L'Jarius Sneed.
Right now, we're talking to Jay Binkley in here. I think they're making a mistake. I look at, they don't have any corner who has started for more than 4 years in the NFL. The two guys that I would say you made the big improvements, like DeAndre Baker, you're right, first round talent, coming off a significant injury.
You should
injury
be ready for training camp.
Are we sure?
Should be.
Are we sure?
No, nothing's a guarantee.
So if we're going into this where I would say with Mike Hughes, who there's no way you can count on Mike Hughes to play 16 games. There's nothing in his track record that would lead you to believe that he's going to play 16, 17 games for the Kansas City Chiefs this year. And DeAndre Baker, it's not like DeAndre Baker also has a proven track record. So he's coming off a significant injury, and he's also been up to this point, let's call it what it was, he's been a bust. He has been a bust of a first-round draft pick. That's who they're counting on to play corner for this team?
Hey, listen, in college football, DeAndre Baker was a stud. It was a rough go in New York. It just didn't fit out. It was a bad scheme for him. Change of scenery helps guys like that out. I trust in what the Chiefs are doing. I do. I mean, this team's been in 3 straight AFC title games. They've been in 2 straight Super Bowls. I mean, they know what they have, and they know what they're looking for. Would you? Let me ask you this. If push came to shove, would you sign Richard Sherman for 1 year?
No, I would have just brought back Bashaud Breeland.
You don't have that option now. You don't have that option.
Yeah,
now.
I wouldn't sign Richard Sherman.
So
I'm not
so
in the business of signing
corners you have instead of Sherman.
Yeah, I'm just signing an over 30, okay. And I love Sherman. I think he's going in the Hall of Fame. I'm going to sign a corner over 30 with his injury history. I don't know if that makes you a whole lot better. I made this point yesterday. I think maybe my unease is, and I know everybody loves Sneed. Everybody loves L'Jarius Sneed. The Chiefs' entire defense, for the most part, is predicated on a fourth-round corner being a number one corner. If Sneed regresses in any way this season, their defense doesn't work. It's predicated on, all right, we know Tyrann Mathieu is going to be able to cover up a deficiency when it comes to slot corner, right? He has been one of the best slot corners in the NFL the last 2 seasons. It also works if Sneed is great. Sneed can't just be average. He can't be Charvarius Ward, for example. He can't be Marcus Cooper from a couple years ago. He has to be a top corner in the league. And if he's not, their defense doesn't work.
And it's, again, we're talking about a guy that was injured and we expect him to be healthy. I mean, that's kind of the theme what we're looking at here. We're looking at guys to turn that corner, be healthy for the season. I'm just saying, if things work out, the Chiefs do have two first-round corners since 2018 on their roster. If things work out, if they coach them up at the level that they think they can.
Bing, do you know what time it is?
It's random question time!
Bing, what do you make of HUD's pizza choice? Did you see what HUD's pizza choice was?
It was bad, man. It was, like, cringeworthy. I mean, avocados? They don't belong on pizza. Or, you know, I'm not a big guac guy anyway, so you're asking the wrong guy. But no, that goes off the pizza. It's one of those things you scoop off and you throw on the floor
with
the dog.
Did you see those Bud Light seltzers? So they had roasted marshmallow,
no,
spice pumpkin, no, and then they had like prickly pear.
No, I can't man.
Are you a seltzer guy at all?
No, not at all. Won't do it.
You're just a traditional beer guy.
Yeah, give me just the beer. Beer's beer.
Beer is 100% beer.
I understand the seltzer market's big. You got all these breweries doing seltzers now. Everybody's doing seltzers. It's the in thing, man. But you know what? It's going to go out like the braided belt and pleated pants. You know, it's going to go out of style. Beer doesn't go anywhere, C-Dot.
It's beer
been
is forever.
Since the beginning of time. I mean, IPAs go all the way back to British frigates. I mean, it's been forever.
Someone on the text line asked this question. Hey, Bink. Do you consider Tyrann Mathieu's outburst on Twitter something to take seriously?
I do, but he's got a self-check inside where he deletes. Like, he's got that mechanism. Hey, I should delete that. So he at least most of the time goes and deletes it. So you're like, I shouldn't have tweeted this. So that's good. He understands it. Like, it's the first part of the problem is understanding you have a problem. Like, we've all had these times where you grab your phone and then you put it down because you think it's straight. You know, let me put the phone down. Let me think about this. If I still feel this way tomorrow, I'll tweet something out. You know, sit, stew on it, think about it. It's like texting somebody angry. Just give it some time. You might change your opinion. That's my advice in love, too, by the way.
I don't really even understand his complaint when it comes to his contract. If we were having this conversation in early August, I'd be on his side.
Exactly.
The Chiefs always do this, though, when it comes to contract negotiations. Maybe he thought it was going to happen a little sooner than it's come together, but I firmly believe that Tyrann Mathieu will not be in training camp under the current contract. They will come to an agreement at some point between now and the moment they report at Chiefs training camp. And ultimately, that's all that matters.
That's why you don't tweet these things. You have the patience to go back. They're going to take it. He understands the business, though. He understands it's a business. Well, this is the business. You know, I love Derek Fisher when he had his press conference in Indy. Listen, he understood the Chiefs. He's coming off Achilles. Like, they get rid of me, you know? He understood it's a business. This is the NFL. Like, the NFL's not there for attaboys and pats on the back, man. They're not going to do it. They're going to spit you out, chew you up, spit you out of their mouth as fast as they can and get younger faster unless your name is Patrick Mahomes.
Text line 913-576-7610. Random question time with Jay Binkley. Hey, Bink, what's your favorite go-to snack at a gas station?
At a gas station? Roller food, man. Roller food. That was one of the things of the pandemic. Like, some Quick Trips had it still and some didn't. Like, my local one didn't. And it drove me crazy. Like, I straight to the roller food, man. A couple taquitos. Maybe some of those buffalo chicken things.
Love those buffalo chicken things.
They've actually added burritos to the repertoire.
I'm not getting the burrito's a little bit too exploratory for me.
You put in a little bag, you bring it up to the counter, you know, it's like I got four of these in here, you know?
I'm a big sunflower seed individual. That's probably my go-to snack at a gas station.
Salt and pepper, pickle, or what?
I just regular or barbecue.
Just barbecue.
Pickle's too much. I don't want pickle sunflower.
Do you actually
seeds.
Eat the seeds or do you just get the taste, the flavor, and spit out?
I eat the seeds, but then I spit out the shell. If you're eating the sunflower seed shell, you're a savage.
Try this. I got something for you if you like to chew something.
Yeah, I'm not a dip guy. I've never had dip before. But
I know.
I'd
like to see you try it.
I've seen you do it before. It just doesn't look like something I would be a part of. It seems like something I would hurt myself.
You would.
Why would I want to try that if I'm going to hurt myself?
I think it should be entertaining. Well, it already is, but I'm just saying it'd kick it up a notch.
What are your expectations for Juan Thornhill this season? Text line wants to know.
You know, I like Juan Thornhill, you know, baby Tyrann Mathieu. Could he become that level? I mean, the thing about Juan Thornhill is he shows those flashes. He's like, all right, I get it. I get it why the Chiefs great. It's a prove-it year for him, I think. I mean, he's got to step out of those. They're talking about Cole Hardman. There's some guys that I put in that prove it category for the Chiefs. DeMarcus Robinson. You know, Taco Charlton's there. And I think Juan Thornhill, show me what you got. We got these expectations, what you can be. What can you really be?
Do you think Trey Smith could start on the offensive line?
You know, you hear the reports, man. They like some Trey Smith. I'd be cautious this year. I mean, just listening in the heck last week, I'd be cautious this year with him, especially competing against some of the experience on the right side that he's going to be competing against, like Kyle Long. Unless he said, okay, Kyle Long, we're going to go ahead and put you at tackle. We're going to put Trey Smith at guard. Can Trey Smith be as good as LDT? LDT with the year off? Yeah, I think he can. Is he better than Wiley? Yeah. Is he better than Allegretti? Probably. So, yeah, I think Trey Smith is there. I'd say give him 4 or 5 weeks before he's named the starter.
Okay, we're going to do something that I maybe have never done before we get you out of here. So we have 1 minute left in this segment.
Yeah.
We're going to give you 1 minute to talk about the NHL playoffs. We normally talk about the NBA playoffs on this show because I can't really tell you who's even in the NHL playoffs. But I know that you and Fesco have a nice fun back and forth when it yes. comes to you like hockey. So we will give you 1 minute. Rob, you can start the clock. You can also give him the horn at the end of it. We'll give you 1 minute, and then we'll take a break. Bink on the NHL playoffs.
Well, first of all, my Blues are out of it, and that sucks.
Oh, man.
Number two, everybody started jumping on the Colorado Avalanche bandwagon.
Patrick Waugh still playing?
No.
Okay.
But I hope they lose. You know, they're playing the Vegas Golden Knights. It's been a great series, right? Colorado had the streak going. 5 straight games of winning 3+ goals. I mean, they've just been destroying everybody. Of course, the Blues were a byproduct of that. But here come the Golden Knights, series tied 2-2. If you're not in the playoff beards or playing when you're hurt, you're not enjoying what the Stanley Cup is. Now, there's some that aren't as good, like Tampa Bay Lightning, defending champs, playing the Hurricanes. Tampa Bay's already up 3-1. Canada's going to open the borders for the semifinals. How about that? They're going to actually open up the borders. The Blue Jays still stuck playing in Buffalo. But the NHL is going to let the Americans in, man. Well, not the Americans, a lot of Canadians and Russians on those teams. But they're going to let the NHL teams back in order. I think, CDOT, one thing about the NHL is you need to go to the playoff games. You need to enjoy it. Like, if you're not enjoying that Islanders-Bruins series, what that is, the intensity of what that all was. I mean, that was just pure intensity, pure excitement that you had. People lining up outside the doors. The Islanders lead that series 3-2. People are lined outside the door. And then, of course, you have the Canadians sweeping the Jets.
I feel like that was a long minute. I feel like Rob was gracious with that minute.
I got a little sidetracked.
I feel like he was gracious with that minute, though. He gave you a long minute.
Get a little sidetracked.
Bink, we appreciate you.
Thank you. You want my college baseball playoff series?
No. Actually, you know what? Stay here. I actually want to talk to you about something coming over on the other side. I have one thing I want to talk to you about coming over on the other side.
Robert
keep
it
locked in right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive. Weekdays 2-6.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome back into The Drive on 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app.
All right, I didn't have this plan to talk to Binkley about, but I can't not talk to Binkley about this. Coming up in the 5 o'clock hour, we will talk about Dayton Moore. This is the 15-year anniversary of him becoming the general manager for the Royals. We'll also update you on everything happening in Kansas City. So there is a story out right now from Yahoo Sports. It is Pete Thamel, one of the top reporters in college football. He put this out. Yahoo Sports spoke to more than a dozen stakeholders Monday on every side of the playoff decision. Amid those conversations, a surprise emerged. Officials on campuses, in conference offices, and in television have expressed an openness towards a 12-team college football playoff as the most likely result. Bing, if I can get on my soapbox just a little bit. College football has a playoff system that's more than four teams. It's called the regular season. The regular season, there are certain benchmarker games that we all know, whether it's Alabama plays LSU, whether it's Notre Dame travels to a team in the ACC. And we know the winner of that continues to have the opportunity to participate in the playoff, and the loser doesn't. If we're going to take away, to me, the beauty of the college football regular season, to now let virtually any great slash good team into the playoff, to me, you take away what makes college football so exciting over the course of the fall. I am anti a 12-team playoff. I don't even think an 8-team playoff is good. And we can get into why an 8-team playoff I don't think is very good. But 12 screams to me, we lost so much money in COVID, this is the fastest way for us to get it back. That we got to give people more games they're going to watch, and from the television dollars, we can make up all the money we lost in 2020 over the next 3 or 4 years. I can't think of any other reason to do that other than try to make the money back.
Well, that's a big part of it, is make the money back. These schools took it the shorts this past season, not able to have people in. I think a lot of people are tired of Clemson being in all the playoffs but one. Tired of Alabama being in every playoffs but one. Ohio State, multiple appearances. Oklahoma, multiple appearances. Notre Dame. It's a few teams that actually make it. Not only that, but you have Power 5 conferences, and you only have four of them that can get into the postseason. And we see teams that are hot late, and it's such an uneven playing field with the conferences and everything. I think this year was the year they should have dabbled with the expansion of it, because they could have. I mean, all rules were off. All bets were off. This year, look at Major League Baseball, expanded the playoffs. Things were different this year. This was the year to sample it, stick your feet in the water and see if it works. And they missed out on the opportunity. They had four teams in the playoffs. There's really like four teams playing out of conference opponents with all their squad, because half the squad's players opted out of the bowl games to prepare for the NFL draft. I think you could have made a case for it this year. Like, if you go down and teams like, you know, you would have had Iowa State in it this year. You would have had
Indiana. And they would have got smoked.
You would have had Indiana in it this year. You would have had Coastal Carolina in it this year. And you would have had Cincinnati, a team that a lot of teams had a lot of respect for that didn't quite get into the college football playoffs.
But, Mickey, let me ask
and
you
how are
this
they going to get into it? I mean, they play a regular season, they play these games. Like, Cincinnati can roll the field, go undefeated, and not get in the playoffs.
Do we want those teams to be in it or have a realistic chance of winning it? Like, if we're simply saying, hey, we just want to see Coastal Carolina or Iowa State in this, but we don't really think they can win, we just want new teams in it, cool. Or do we want to create a system in which those teams have a chance to actually advance? Because if Clemson had played Iowa State for a game that mattered this season, Iowa State would have got beat by 42 points. Is that what we want? We want more of those bloodshed games on national TV to really embarrass teams.
I mean, the
like
Alabamas
that?
And the Clemson of the world don't want to see it, because they don't want to see, they see the extra games that they would have to play. But I think if you're a team, just shorten. If you don't want this, shorten it. Just take the Power 5 conference and make Division 1. Like, get rid of everybody else. Like, what justification do some of these schools like Coastal Carolina, Division 1, they take it on the shorts, playing anybody and everybody, like Kansas. They were supposed to play in South Carolina this year. They went to Lawrence again and beat the Jayhawks. But what significance do they have? Like, if you're for the MAC and you go undefeated, what's your prize at the end of what's your carrot at the end of the stick? Going to the Motor City Bowl? You don't have one. At least the NCAA tournament with basketball is great, because anybody could be in it. Like, literally, if you lace your sneakers up to play for Division I team, you can be in the postseason. Win your postseason tournament and you're in. I think a lot of people are tired of the same old schools in the college football playoffs. It's why we went from the BCS to the playoffs. They didn't even want to do that. But it was Alabama and LSU playing in the national title game of the BCS. And the powers that be got together in New Orleans and talked about it and said, we got to do something about this. Because everybody was screaming, which I was fine with it. I mean, it was a great game. You know, you have the two powers like Alabama and LSU, but nobody else wanted to see it. And the powers that be got together and said, all right, let's have a playoff. So they go to the playoffs. It's not going to diminish the regular season, because it still matters to win your conference, getting that automatic bid. Don't chance it by being on the outside in the playoffs. I don't think it takes away from anything. Not only that, it gives the schools like Cincinnati, who's a damn good football team, You know what? Reason to play the best. A reason to play the best in the non-conference. A reason to be undefeated. Get yourself in the postseason. Not go and have a great year like they did and not even get into the postseason.
I want to give you a stat really quickly. I got to give credit to who it came from. Gabe DeArmon. So I'm subscribed to Power Mizzou, and every Monday he does his Monday morning 10 thoughts, right? So he did this. Over the last 10 years in college football, there have been 305 five-star kids, right? Over the last 10 years. What percentage of those kids do you think went to Alabama, Georgia, Clemson, Ohio State, Florida State, LSU? So out of 305, we're talking six schools. What percentage of five-star kids do you think committed to one of those six schools?
I'd say 85%.
60%.
Oh, really?
If we're talking four-star kids. So now we're talking, all right, not the elite, but we're using those same schools. It's at 25%.
Yep.
So if we combine five-star and four-star kids, almost 30% of them go to six schools. So I'm with you. Do I want to see
a guy like Mac Jones? He was a three-star kid. I mean, you develop some of these kids.
Of course, but you also put Mac Jones with 11 future NFL
Marcus
players.
Marcus Mariota had, what, two stars? Wins the Heisman Trophy. I mean, it happens.
There's no system in college football that's going to be fair as long as these numbers continue to exist. To me, the biggest problem in college football is scholarship limits. If you're going to give Alabama the same number of scholarships that you're going to give Iowa State, we have now seen it's better for you to back up at Alabama than start at Iowa State. Matt Castle never happens if he goes to another Power 5 school. He never played at USC.
His only start was at tailback.
But you got a chance to every day practice against NFL players. You're in that system. You got a chance. So if college football is really interested in moving the talent around, you got to move the scholarship limit from 85 to like 50. And then those four-star kids and five-star kids, all right, well, you can't go to Alabama anymore. The scholarships are taken up. Now you have to express. But as long as this stat exists that of the truly elite kids, they all go to six schools, I don't care what system you create. If Cincinnati and Clemson play each other in football, Clemson is going to beat them almost every time.
And they get two more wrinkles. The free transfer rule, where you can transfer anywhere, including interconference play.
Yeah.
And image and likeness. That's why a lot of these states are like, okay, you know, it's bipartisan. The politicians are getting together and say, we need to pass this because we can't lose recruiting because they're like at their state school. Like if you're Ohio, like, well, let's pass this because we don't want to lose these kids to the state of Florida. Like that's the new wrinkle to coming into the image and likeness. Players wanting to go to a state where they can benefit and profit on their likeness. So all these factors come in.
Bink, I apologize for keeping you one extra segment. I could argue about the college football playoff for 4 hours.
I appreciate
hours,
so. We need to talk about Waffle House, so you owe me.
My bad. I apologize.
Thank you.
I still owe you that Chipotle burrito, too.
I accept at both some those
point,
apologies.
At some point, I'll give you the Chipotle burrito. I keep telling you to sign up for Venmo or Cash App, and you continue not to do it. So at this point, it's just a penalty to you.
Yeah, I'm just a different generation, man.
Coming up at the top of the hour, today is the 15-year anniversary of the Royals hiring Dayton Moore. Keep it locked in right here. It's The Drive on 610 Sports Radio and the brand new Odyssey app.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend? Or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.